Thank you. So we are looking in this series through Psalm and the way that David worships. And today we have the nice, light and easy to understand worship while at war. And I don't know for you what you think about when the idea of war comes up. Or if you see this particular line, "War, what is it good for?" I can see Alan singing along already. I hope there'd be someone who recognised this lyric from the song. I'm not going to sing it. I'm really not going to sing it. The actual lyric is, "War, huh, yeah. What is it good for?" And the response, "Absolutely nothing." Oh, wow. So, yes. "War, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing." Maybe when we see about war, we think that. Maybe we think with that end of the scale on that war doesn't work, war doesn't succeed, war causes more problems than it solves. I don't know if any of you watched the debate in our parliament back at the end of last year, where there was very eloquent arguments from both sides. One side taking the around the war in Syria and our government voting on whether we should be involved in that. One side taking a position that war wasn't going to help, war wasn't what was needed there, we shouldn't go to war in Syria. And the other side arguing equally eloquently that war was what was needed. We needed to go to war, and we know how that ended up. Maybe for us as Christians, we're at some of those ends of the scale. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but if I was to give those responses and ask you whether you agreed or not, we might find there'd be quite a difference in opinion across the church. And maybe it's not something that we talk about too much, war. But actually, if we look through the Old Testament, it pops out quite a lot in the verses that Anne very eloquently read for us this morning. Sorry, I really stitched you up on those verses this morning. But war's first and foremost there. In case you didn't catch it as we went through the verses, this is the kind of the bare stats of that. So 22,000 Armenians were killed in the 1 Chronicles passage. 18,000 Edomites. And it even talks about hundreds of horses being hamstrung or injured. So it's there. We can't avoid it sometimes, particularly when we're talking about the Israelites and everything that's going on there with them in the Promised Land. And it's a tough passage to read, not just as Anne found with the words, but to read through and try and understand what it's talking about with war. But I guess one thing to note with that, one thing to understand, is that it was about David obeying God. There was a refrain that came up twice in there. It said, "The Lord gave David victory wherever he went." The Lord gave David victory. This wasn't about David deciding that he wanted to conquer some land for the fun of it, or because he wanted to exceed his power, or because they'd been wrong to him in previous times and he wanted to get back at them. This was David obeying what God wanted. If you have your Bibles open for the 1 Chronicles, which was on page 422, and you want to flick back to just one page back, 1 Chronicles 17, that Paul actually covered last week, there's a verse in there that really explains what's going on here with the particular promise for the Israelites. 1 Chronicles 17, 9 and 10 says this. This is God giving a promise to the Israelites via the prophet Nathan to David. It says this, "And I will provide a place for my people Israel and will plant them so that they can have a home of their own and no longer be disturbed. Wicked people will not oppress them anymore as they did at the beginning and have done ever since the time I appointed leaders over my people Israel. I will also subdue all their enemies. I declare to you that the Lord will build a house for you." So there's a specific promise for the Israelites that they were going to have this place at this time and be protected from their enemies. Their enemies were going to be subdued. And that's a lot of what's going on here with this passage. But the section that's repeated there, "The Lord gave David victory wherever he went," we might read that and we might think, well, great. Will he always give me victory? Does becoming a Christian mean that we automatically get victory? Well, that's a bit tricky to think about. I don't know what happens then if two Christians end up on the opposite side of a fight. Who wins in that case? But it's a bit more than that. We could read these passages and think, fantastic, I get an easy ride as a Christian. I'm never going to have any problems. God's going to move my enemies out of the way in whatever situation I'm in. And that can happen. But I don't think we can read it as that we'll always get that happening for us. The more significant part is that it was the Lord that gave David victory. David was doing what God wanted him to do, and the Lord gave him victory. The Lord honoured that. The Lord gave him the ability to win those battles and the things we can read about in that passage. So it's better to focus on that side of things. The Lord gave David victory. Maybe some of us know in our lives that this isn't true. Maybe some of us have experienced times where we felt we haven't had a victory in our lives. Where we've come up against a tough situation and felt we've lost badly in that situation. And even if we think about it now, today, there's probably Christians around the world who are part of the persecuted church that we often pray for. And it's maybe hard to see how they're being given victory in those situations. So what does war mean to us? I realise that we all come from different situations. For me, I've lived in this country my entire life. And that means that whilst this country has technically been at war, it's a very distant thing. The wars have taken place in other countries. They've not affected me. They've not been something that's happening in the country I've lived in. But I realise that actually we as a church represent lots of countries around here. We have these flags up to be specific people. And so maybe there's people here this morning who have come from a country where war has been a much more real thing. Maybe the reason you're here now is because you've fled from those countries where there's been war going along. Maybe, in fact, some of these flags represent countries that are at war with each other right at this moment. Maybe some people here have actually fought in conflict. Max, who was baptised last week, he shared that he was in the army for a while, and maybe that's true for some other people as well. So maybe your understanding of war is a bit different. You've experienced war firsthand. Maybe for some of us, we describe our life as a war zone, and we're not actually exaggerating. While it might not involve fighting and armies, actually our day-to-day life is something akin to a war zone. Maybe for some of us, the things we have to face each day feel like a bit of a war, feel like a battle. Maybe we need a bit of strength just to get to our work in the mornings, or leave our house to cope with the things that we know we come up against in the day. So if we see the passage with David, he has these big wars, and maybe we can't relate to that. But actually, a lot of what's going on with David in Chronicles is, David in Psalms, is he's talking about the time when he was being personally pursued by Saul. These stories of where David, one minute he's playing the harp, and next minute Saul's chucking a spear at him, and then he has to then go on the run because Saul's got in for him. Maybe for us that's a better idea of war, minus the sword throwing and escaping from death in that way, but particular person who's got it in for us. Maybe when we go to work tomorrow morning or whatever situation we're in, we know we're going to come up against someone who's going to do their best to make things tricky for us. So we all have maybe different ideas of war. And actually I think that in this passage it's a bit more helpful to look at how David describes God's protection. We've had it read to us once, it's been in one of the songs, so the verses should be familiar. If you want to follow along with this, Psalm 18 in the Pew Bibles is on page 551. These fantastic verses that we've read and sung through, up on the screen as well if you want to follow along. Psalm 18, verses 1 and 2 say this: I love you, Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress and my deliverer. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation. And actually, if we look at the words he's using there, hopefully it makes it a bit more real to us. The Lord is my strength. This idea that God's strength can overcome our problems. We're not fighting this in our own strength. Our weakness can be made good through God's strength. Or a rock, something immovable, something strong. Sometimes it's a bit hard for us. We live in this area, there's not a lot of rocks around maybe, but sometimes if you ever get to the seaside or somewhere like that and you're watching the waves crash against the rock, that idea of a rock that stands up to even the power of the tides. Also a fortress, offering us protection from danger. As we read these things, maybe they're a bit abstract to us, maybe we haven't all been in wars, but for David, these were real things. He's describing in words situations he's had. There's been times where he's had to hide behind rocks from Saul, or in the backs of caves, or hide out in fortresses when armies are attacking. There's been times where he's needed a shield to hide from the enemy's arrows. and salvation. Salvation from situations sometimes, but also salvation for being in situations. Sometimes God equips us to stick around in a situation rather than us rescuing from it. I also want to look at the Message Bible. I don't know if everyone knows this. In case you don't, the Message Bible attempts to not directly translate from the old word, the words as they were at that time to now, but tries to rewrite it in a language that we would use today. So the Psalms are pretty vivid anyway, but having them in the Message, I think, helps a bit. And we kind of get a feeling of what David might have said if he was standing up saying the Psalms to us today. This is it from the Psalms. I love you, God. You make me strong. God is bedrock under my feet, the castle in which I live, my rescuing knight, my God, the high crag, where I run for dear life, hiding behind the boulders, safe in the granite hideout. Again, that's fantastic words, I think, to describe God's protection, to give us an idea of the sort of protection God can give us, and maybe some of us can attest to some of these things. Maybe we've been in situations where we really have felt God is a bedrock under our feet, giving us something that we can stand on and hope to ride out that situation, giving us a way to get through it. Maybe it's the idea of a castle that resonates with us, that strong building where we can go and hide out. Maybe the situation is all going off around us, but we're inside that castle, safe for a period of time. Or it may be for us, it's something like a rescuing knight. Not maybe the fairy tale knights in the Disney stories, but something a bit more real than that. A knight coming along, the idea of strength, plucking us out of a situation and rescuing us. Or many of the other things, boulders, granite hideouts, all these things. So even if our idea of war is very different than from what the passage we read in the passage that Anne read to us, there's definitely something in these Psalms that we can see how David was describing the protection and the other side of it. And I think they're really great symbols of the sort of protection that God can give us. Okay, I should just explain. Actually, I'm quite glad I didn't stand up the top, because if I stood up there now, my face would be in the monkey's mouth, and that wouldn't be a great image. Just to explain this picture, maybe some of you recognise it. You can admit that in a second if you want. This picture is technically it's a monkey selfie. I should probably explain a selfie just in case you've managed to avoid that word for the last few years, and then explain how we end up with a monkey selfie. But so for those of you who don't know, if you've ever been to somewhere like Windsor Castle or something like that, you've probably seen a few people with a camera held about there quite often. Their face is there, maybe their friend there, and they've got Windsor Castle in the background. And that is a selfie. For some reason, we have a new word for it. It's basically taking a photo of yourself in front of a building. People like to have themselves as a memory, I guess. It's even gone so far now that you can get selfie sticks. Have you seen these where you have a camera and I can see people nodding? Maybe some of you have them. I don't know. You have the camera on a stick about a metre away. I don't know if it gives you a better picture. I'm looking for some people who might understand why we have selfie sticks. But you have a selfie stick and it's a thing and you can buy those, apparently. But this picture here, and this is from the BBC website, so this is some legitimacy to it. This is a monkey selfie. And what happened was, a few years back, this picture came out. And there's a bit of controversy, because you can see in the copyright there, it's taken by a professional photographer. The credit was taken by a professional photographer. The picture was taken by a monkey. And an animal charity got involved and said, well, actually, it's a bit unfair. You're claiming copyright for this picture when you're saying it's a monkey selfie. The guy, the great quote actually, the photographer said, I'm probably the first person who's been sued by an animal. You know, maybe that's true. But on the face of it, you think, well, yeah, that's a bit unfair. If he's saying the monkey took the photo and he's getting the credit for it. But actually, it's a bit more to it than that. What really happened is this guy spent a long time photographing animals, and whilst it's a career, he does make money out of it. He does it as well to raise awareness of animals. So he'd gone to this place where these animals were in Indonesia, been there for a fair few days. He'd taken the time to set up his camera in such a way so that the monkey could take a photo. It's not like the monkey grabbed the camera, sussed it out, turned it on, turned it around and took a photo. It wasn't like that at all. He'd set it up. Apparently he'd even mimicked to the monkey how he was supposed to take a selfie. I have no idea how that would have worked. But so there's a bit more to it than that. And so he took this photo and then it got picked up by animal charities and stuff happened. And actually, in the end, the courts ruled for him. They said, no, animals can't have copyrighted photographs. You're free to own the copyright. So, that's how it ended up. I'll let you decide. Maybe it comes down to whether you like animals or not, whether you think it's fair that the monkey takes the credit or not. But the reason for showing this is it's about taking credit. Whatever side we might fall on, the courts ruled that actually the photographer takes the credit for this, or at least enough of the credit to own the copyright. It's a bit unfair to say that the monkey should take all the credit when basically it seems like he just turned up and pushed a button and this came out. And there's probably a bunch of photos where it went wrong and things like that, and the photographer did some work to make it work out. So what's the challenge then for us? Well, we look at worship at war. We might think, well, war's such an abstract thing. War's an Old Testament thing. Hopefully we've seen that actually the way David talks about war and God's protection is something we can relate to a bit more. And I think there's a couple of things that we can take from this passage, some things that we can learn from it about how David worships during war or after war, how he looks at the idea of war and how he looks to God in those times and how he worships God. The first one, actually, I think that if we have these tough situations, if we've been in a tough situation, and like David does in other Psalms, we've cried out to God, God, get me out of this situation. God, help me in this situation. I can't see a way that I can survive this without your help. If we've done that and then the situation improves and we're months later looking back, do we thank God? Do we just forget about it and then we're into the next tough situation? Or do we take time, like David does in this Psalm? We don't necessarily have to write it out, but he's acknowledging what God's done for him. He's laying it out. He's saying, God, you did this for me. You made my path clear. All these things. It's like the story in the New Testament of the 10 lepers who are healed by Jesus. And he tells them to go off, and if you don't know the story, he tells them to go off to someone who can acknowledge that he's been healed. They've been healed to prove it, to prove that he's done this miracle. And only one of them comes back. Only one of them bothers to come back and thank him. The other nine just go on with it. Are we too often like the nine? Are we like, yes, okay, God did something for me, great, but I'm going to move on. And then next time we call out to him again. But maybe that's not a problem we have. Maybe it's a bit more about giving God the credit. Maybe like the situation with the monkey, not to compare us to the monkey, but maybe we're taking the credit too much for something. David's pretty clear in Psalm 18 where the credit goes. If you want to look at Psalm 18, verses 30 to 36 that were read out to us before, it's page 551 if you haven't got it open. This is how David describes what God did for him. As for God, his way is perfect. The Lord's word is flawless. He shields all who take refuge in him. For who is God beside the Lord? And who is the rock except our God? It is God who arms me with strength and keeps my way secure. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He causes me to stand on the heights. He trains my hands for battle, and my arms can bend a bow of bronze. You, God, make my saving help my shield, and your right hand sustains me. Your help has made me great. You provide a broad path for my feet, so that my ankles do not give way. Whilst the emphasis is mine, it's pretty clear from reading that that's what David was trying to say. He's putting the credit to God. There's lots of times where it acknowledges that David was a great leader, and he was a good leader, and not to downplay that. But certainly in Psalm 18 and other places as well, every chance he gets, he turns it back onto God. Remember, this is David who fought Goliath as a kid. This is David who protected sheep from lions when he was even younger. The entire Israelite army didn't want to stand up to Goliath, and David as a kid stood up and said, I can beat this giant. He'd probably be within his rights to say, you know what, I've got some military strength. I've got some ideas about winning battles. I'm strong. I've done my time. He could have taken some of the credit for himself, but he's pretty clear in this to say, you know what, I couldn't have done it without God. God was with me in these battles. God was protecting me. God was making my path straight, making it so I could sustain me, my right hand, all these things. And so my prayer, I guess, for us as we go out into our week, whatever we might be facing, whether we have battles that we're in the middle of the moment, in the middle of at the moment, whether there's things that are coming up that we might consider battles that we don't know we're going to face yet. Whether we've come out of the battle of a battle and it's time for us to look back and thank God for it. My prayer is this. I pray that we can truly worship God while we're at war, while we're looking back on our wars. I pray that we can thank God for the times he's helped us. Not be like the 9 who didn't return when they were healed, but be like the 1 who went back and thanked him. And I pray that we can fully give him the credit, not explain away our part in it as being more significant than it is. Yes, there's things we have to do. Yes, there's a part we have to play. But if we're there saying, the only reason I got out of this situation was because of what I did, that's the wrong approach. And we might not say that out loud. Maybe we're a bit too British to actually say that. But we might have it in the back of our mind, and that might be stopping us from truly worshipping God at war. So I pray that we can fully give God the credit, and then that we might be able to pray, like David did, right back at the beginning of Psalm 18, we might be able to say these words and mean them. I love you, Lord, my strength. Amen.